So we are very lucky that we have this chus to learn in the same base medrash and to learn Torah from Rav Rosner and Rav Leibowitz on a regular basis here in the Keli base medrash. We are grateful enough that they give us shiurim individually, but to hear from them together is definitely an outstanding opportunity. So the annual Q&A, I believe this is our fourth one, is a highlight for many of the guys on the program, so we're incredibly appreciative that they are willing to give us some of their time to do this. Just on a technical note, you guys have pre-submitted questions. We will probably not be able to get to all of them. It's just a matter of time constraints, so we apologize in advance for that. All right, for the first question. What's the single greatest struggle one faces when going into the field of chinuch or rabbanos, and what advice would you give someone fighting this struggle?
Teach before people.
You say that every year. Bershosar of Leibowitz, the Marad Asra of this Asra, this room. Just again, it's always a pleasure to share words of Torah. And again, as the Mesul Tisharm writes at the beginning, I don't think so much of what I'm going to say are chidushim, but it's good to chazer over certain things and good to always remember the obvious. So I just with that in mind, again, this isn't a shiur, it's a shmooz, it's just some ideas that maybe, our being a little older than you, we have some more of life experiences. I never saw myself as a shul rabbi. I never saw myself in chinuch, in even during Shana Bet, when I kind of like the decision was about, I saw which direction my life was going to take, hopefully, with Yad HaDeshmaya. In the world of chinuch, I saw myself in chinuch, and that's why I thought myself in YU and in Smicha. And Rabbanus kind of happened. Kadosh Baruch Hu had other plans. In YU Smicha, there are chinuch classes, there are Smicha classes, as Rabbi Leibowitz will, I'm sure I could tell you more about that, I guess, tonight at 10:45. But I remember one thought, which I think is so true, that one of our Rebbeim told us during one of the Smicha classes. He said, obviously, every shul is their own challenge, and every classroom is their own challenge. My student teaching in MTA was very challenging, coming in once a week as a substitute. Not the greatest, guys aren't ready to, let's learn. One has to know and what they're getting themselves into. But the question originally was about Rabbanus, so I'll focus on that. But again, chinuch has their own challenges as well, every different age and every different stage. But the Rav pointed out, one of the Smicha classes was there are two types of rabbis. There are the Batlanim Rabbanim and the Lamdanim Rabbanim. There are some Rabbanim that go and they're Lamdanim and they're ready to give Shiurim and to bring up the people and inspire them. It's unbelievable, they're Lamdanim. You know what their challenge is? To sit and schmooze at the sisterhood meeting. You know what their challenge is? After a kiddush, to go around to all the different members, because that's what a rav has to be. Right, they quote from that on Reb Chaim's. It doesn't say on Reb Chaim's kever, but I was there. But what it said, what does it talk about on Reb Chaim's kever? Heard this first from Reb Yitzchak Kohn. But maybe there was an original and a plan. There were two words. It doesn't say chesed gavra, right? Ish chesed. And the rav quotes from his grandfather Reb Chaim that the goal. What's the job of a rabbi? The job of a rabbi is not to inspire everyone with the Ksos and Nesivis, which is wonderful, but it's to be there for the fellow Jews and to be their connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of effort, takes a lot of personal attention, and it comes from a lot of just life experiences. And a lot is just being there. Just being there. So for the Lamdan rabbi, which I think maybe, I don't know, depending on what your personality is, that's a big challenge. To be able to take out time that's not considered quote-unquote bittul, this is very important. And this is needed, and this is giving, and this is one of the amudim sheha'olam omed alav. And wants to recognize that. But then you have the other, also, you have the batlanim rabbanim. There are some that have the personality, they love to shmooze. They just love people. And they were built, there are certain people that were built to be a pulpit rabbi. You see them and they're like, they know, they remember everybody's name, and they're, oh, you're so-and-so's cousin, and they just know. I look at some of my friends, I'm like, wow. They're just like a natural. So for those rabbis, they have to remember to give the Gemara Shir every week. And they have to remember the inspiration of being a Lamdan, and the rabbi also has to be that Torah personality that brings them up every week through the Drasha and through the Shiurim. So depending on who one is, one has to know what their netiyah is and not forget the other side and recognize that every rabbanis, you know, requires, you know, different emphases. Again, Rabbi Leibowitz and I probably have, in the world of shul, similar type of shuls, both in Woodmere and now in Beit Shemesh and in North Woodmere. But again, every type of shul is different. You know, I have some friends who are rabbis of shuls that I would never be able to do their job, ever, in a million years. Some very large shuls in America. And, you know, and there are others that, you know, there's different shuls, and everybody has to know what their netiyah is, and a lot of times it comes with life experience, you do an assistant rabbi, and this and that. And the same with chinuch, you have to know exactly, have expectations, and maybe don't have expectations. Maybe that's the part of the challenge also. Just to go in, and if somebody is going in it for the right reasons, they're going in it because they want to help Klal Yisrael and Mashpia, they're not going in it because they like to learn, because teaching and learning are two very different things. You know, they're going in it because they want to be Mashpia and give and be a Malami Torah Lama Yisrael and the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So then, you know, Abol Atar Messiah Noso. As much as we do, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can meet us halfway.
It is always a fun night because I get to hear Rabbi Rosner. And I don't think I would love it if you guys could just have a question and answer session with him. I was listening in the car on the way up here for either last year's or 2 years ago's question and answer session. I was just trying to like zip past my answers because I sound like such a buffoon next to Rabbi Rosner. It's ridiculous. But so my answer was going to be very similar, except not as organized and clear. So I also was going to talk about two things. But without the titles, and essentially the two challenges that I just thought of when it comes to Rabbanus in particular, is that first of all, people rely on you a lot when you're a shul rav. They rely on you in times of great need. They rely on you for advice, and sometimes it's unpredictable who's going to be relying on you out of nowhere. Someone you haven't, you know, that hasn't even been to shul in months. Might text you about a terrible divorce that they're going through, or about some sort of illness in the family, and that's something that I guess for the Lamdanim rabbis is a great challenge. You know, for the people who thrive on those kinds of relationships, probably less of a challenge. But I think the advice to counter that is you just have to build relationships constantly. You always have to be building relationships. Always be thinking of a nice word to say to somebody. Ask a personal question, you know, in a non-threatening way, of course, all the time. Just get insight into people's lives, because most often what's going to help people more than any pearls of wisdom that you're going to have, or more than any solutions that you're going to have, because I for one certainly have very few of those, is just that they'll fall back on the relationship, that there's a certain comfort in knowing that there's a relationship with someone that they hold is, you know, is the Rav. So whatever you hold of yourself, that's something that's very valuable to people, but it's much more meaningful if the relationship was there beforehand. So that's a very important element. And the second element, which I'm not going in order of most important to least important, just the second element, is it's a very great challenge to inspire people who are already in their 30s and 40s and 50s and sort of are who they are and have been who they've been. And, you know, when you're dealing with kids, there are certain challenges when dealing with kids, when dealing with high school boys, which is my only experience really dealing with kids. There are obviously certain challenges that are a little more volatile, but there's also like a certain energy and a certain understanding that they know that they're not a finished product yet. They know that they're still growing and that there's still somewhere, something else that they want to be or something more that they want to be. They're just not yet sure what direction that's going to be in. But very often when you're dealing with adults, there's a certain acceptance of who they are, you know, giving up on growing. And one of the great challenges that Rabbanim have, and I think it's really a major part of the job, if not, I would say 50% of the job, is to convince people and show people that they're not done growing, and that you have to keep on growing throughout every day of your life. That's the Vart of Yosef Nechemia Kornitzer says The Medrash tells us that when there was a person falling asleep in Rabbi Akiva's shir, he wanted to wake him up. So he said, Ma ra'asa Esther, limlo chalkuf v'chaf v'zayin medina. What did Esther see that made her want to rule over 127 provinces? So Tava Basbita shal Sari Imenu, comes the descendant of Sari Imenu, who lived for 127 years, and she decided to rule over 127 provinces. So leaving out all the questions, just to get to the chase, Rav Nechemya says that what the Medrash is trying to tell us is that Sari Imenu didn't retire at the age of 100. She didn't retire at the age of 120. She kept pushing forward. She kept on wanting to do more and to grow every day of her life. And when Esther, having accomplished everything that she had already, having done everything right to that point, she so easily could have said, you know what, ad kan, now I play golf. Now I give up. Now I don't grow anymore. Mm-hmm. And she did it. But that takes a certain kolach for a person as they age. And I'm telling you this now, you know, I was thinking about this question, why is this question important to you? Some of you may be going to Chinuch Rabbanus, others, most of you I assume won't. So why is it important to you? Because I think this answer is very important in the sense that you should always, always try to keep sort of that childlike attitude of wanting to grow and knowing that you could be something different than you are. It's more than all of the other reasons. It's the reason, the biggest reason that I so respect and revere of Moshe Weinberger. I think more than all of his other successes, that is his greatest success. That he convinced Balabatim of a certain age and of a certain community that they're not finished growing. It was Rabbi Rosner's great success in Woodmere, I assume in Beit Shemesh as well, though I have less firsthand knowledge. A lot of times also a shul takes on the personality of the rabbi. Rav David Willig was here tonight. I remember Rav David Willig told me when Rabbi Rosner made Aliyah and his shul was looking for a new rabbi, so they had, you know, someone who came who was a YU Torah personality and someone who came who was more from the Brooklyn world, and you know, they're different candidates. And they went with Rabbi Rolbag, who's a wonderful rabbi, who was definitely much more in the Brooklyn world than the YU world. And Rabbi Willig said to me, Rabbi David Willig, who's here tonight, said to me, it's amazing, don't you see what this is, Megala? The Etzem, you know, now they're choosing, the Etzem, they're really a Brooklyn Chevra. But because of Rabbi Rosner's energy and passion and Avas HaTorah, he took them all along for the ride. And like they sort of, they went along with what he was, with the agenda that he was setting. So you do have that a lot as well. And a person should never lose their own personality in trying to be something that they're not. Even as Rabbi Rosner mentioned, we have to try to be memale our chesronos in a way that we serve our kehilos and our talmidim properly.
Many guys in yeshiva often struggle with comparing themselves to one another. It oftentimes gets into their heads and makes them feel like they're failing. Is there a good way to evaluate where one is holding in his avodas Hashem, if not by comparing himself to others around him?
It could be very, very unhealthy to compare yourself to other people, and I like that was the assumption of the question. It's a very important assumption. I can't tell you how many times I've seen Talmidim struggle with this. I remember just one case that comes to mind of a Talmud who came back from a very high-level yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, and he was learning late into the night, every night. He came back looking different, you know, dressing different, he had payas, he was like, all you know, everything that would signify significant change in Eretz Yisrael, and he was learning until like 2, 3 in the morning, something like that, and I don't think anyone noticed, but he wasn't going to Shacharis. He was just totally missing Shacharis, like, every day, because he couldn't leave, he had to be the last one out of the Beis Medrash, because that's success. Success is when he lasts longer than the other guy. So it wasn't about what was best for him, and people know, oh, he's the last one of the Beis Medrash. No one knows that he's not there at Shacharis. And needless to say, he had a precipitous fall after coming back from Eretz Yisrael, because he felt like in the end he felt like a total failure, because he just felt like such a hypocrite, and in a way he was. But it started because of this unhealthy sense of competition, and that's not a way to measure yourself. A person, I think it's important that you set personal goals for yourself, and you know, check in on yourself, make sure that you're meeting your goals, and if you're not, then figure out how to adjust the goals. It's good. That's a good thing to do. It's important to know how to look at other people. You should look at other people as inspiration, but not as. And I understand that it's a trick, that it's not so easy to do. But it's important to. I don't think you should ignore other people. But if you see someone's hasmadi, you should be inspired by their hasmadi. You see someone's avas abrios, you should be inspired by that. You see someone's excitement in doing mitzvos, you should be inspired by that. Someone's love of Torah, how disciplined they are. But you know, I think I mentioned at Shal Shuris the other night after Rabbi Marcus spoke that very often. After Rabbi Marcus speaks, I just think like he's so good at connecting to people. So there are two ways I could take that. One is that like I'm an abject failure and I just can't do that. And the other way to take it is, you know, maybe there's something that's inspiring. That it's because of the love that he has for other people that he's able to connect so well. Maybe I can work on that. Maybe I can become a little better. But not that I'm ever going to be him. You know, learning with Rabbi Rosner for all the years that we learned together, I was able to pick up. You know, when I learn a sugya, now I think in terms of okay, there are this many questions, there are this many nafkaminas, there are this many, putting numbers to everything. Because Rabbi Rosner taught me, that's what you do. You put numbers to everything. Am I ever going to match, you know, many of the other midos? No, of course not. You know, I know who I am. But there's a lot to learn from other people. You have to be lomid mikol adam, but at the same time, really it's very, very important that you not measure yourself by other people's accomplishments, and you should realize that everyone has their challenges. And no one is as perfect as you think they are. And the same people that you think have it all going right for them are likely looking at you and suffering from the same problem that you're suffering from in terms of measuring themselves against you.
That's a similar idea. Again, the Kinaso from Tarba Chachma. So there is an idea of a positive peer pressure, positive gain. You might have heard the thought from Rav Chaim Shmulevitz that at the beginning of Sefer Iyov, Iyov is Hashem gives an open ticket to the Satan. Do whatever you want, right? Because the Satan, Hashem says, "You see my Iyov?" So, because he has everything. So the son takes away his money, it takes away his family, takes away everything. What's the whole book about? The whole Sefer is about him talking to his friends. It's the answer of Chaim Shmulevitz. So why didn't he take away his friends? Hashem just said, "You can't touch him. Take away everything else, you can't touch him." So why did he leave his friends? Because you can't live without a chevra. Living without a chevra would be taking away him. That would be affecting him. And that's why the Satan couldn't touch the chevra. So we are, human beings have to be part of a group. There are many other sources related to that. But so kinas over tavra chachma, the group has to be something of a mashpia on us latova. But we have to remember the Rambam, Hilchos Tshuva, where the Rambam says that we all have free choice, Rishus Kol Adam Nesuna, and the Rambam says we could be as great as Moshe Rabbeinu, and as evil as Yeravam Ben Nevat. What does that mean, Moshe Rabbeinu? The answer is Moshe Rabbeinu, each in our own way. We could fulfill the potential that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us, we could daven, whatever it is, but we have to try to, as was said, we have to try to gain from others, but in a positive way and in an inspiring way. Sometimes when, you know, when I'm around great people, it could be depressing. Sometimes you see some people's memory, see some people's, you know, get to spend time with certain Rabbanim in Eretz Yisrael, you know, you listen to them, and you know, sometimes it's a little bit of Chalishas Hadas. But again, it has to be, it can't be used that, because they wouldn't want that, and that's how they view their Rebbeim, and their Rebbeim view their Rebbeim, and it has to be something positive. And as, again, just to add a vart to what are the points that Rabbi Leibowitz had made, one sort of an amazing thought. If you look at the end of the Aseret HaDibros, the climax, Lo Sachmod, do not covet, do not desire. So what does the Torah say? Lo Sachmod, Beis Re'echa, Va'avdo, Va'amaso, V'shor, V'chamor, V'chol HaShel Re'echa. So he asked Rabbi Yaakov Galinsky, one of the Magidim, in Eretz Yisrael, why does it list off all the details? Right? Don't be jealous of his wife and his house and his animal and... What's that last phrase? It says Rabbi Galinsky, whenever we look at somebody else and we think, oh, I wish, I remember in yeshiva, I was in the Kollel, well, one or two people, I'm in the Kollel Elyon. They are just raw genius. It's raw genius. Like the speed that their mind went, some of my fellow Kollel Elyon, they're just, it was just like beyond, you know, normal, natural. Like sometimes in Shir, like some of them in reversals, like, well, yeah, I'll just be like, I try to take notes. I'm like, it's raw genius for something which I don't have. But you know what? Anybody could work hard, and anyone could push themselves. And it's not what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us; it's what we do with ourselves. But says Rabbi Yaakov Galinsky, "What's v'chala shel ariyacha?" Because usually, when we focus on somebody else, we're only focusing on one part of that person. We focus on, oh, they have this. I wish I had this, and I wish I had that, and I wish I had this family situation, and I wish I had this. V'chala shel ariyacha. We have to look at the whole package. You want his brains, so you got to take his family, you got to take his neighborhood, you got to take his this, you got to take. It's all a package deal. And if we focus on that and we realize everybody has challenges in different areas, so we realize, okay, I'll take my package. I'll take my package. And again, it's a challenge, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us each kohos for the shlichus that we're sent for. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Rav writes in Devar Hashkafa, one of the articles, we're all here for a shlichus. So we have to recognize that we're all here, we all go at different speeds. We just have to always do first what we have to do and then what we want to do. As shachris and davening, and little by little we'll get there. Little by little we get there. And B'ez Hashem, we should all have siyata d'shmaya in that regard.
Oftentimes in yeshiva, when bachrim have halachic questions, they end up asking them to whichever rebbe's around the base medrash or whoever their current magid shir is. This can oftentimes create confusing situations where a talmid will receive conflicting psakim. How should one handle such a situation, and how important is it to have a single posik?
Okay, I'm going to combine this with another later question also. That's okay, because we have time also. But in a minute. But just first, I think at different stages of life, there are different answers to this question. Meaning when somebody's in yeshiva and they have a rebbe, well, who else are they going to ask? And then the following year they have another rebbe, well... So it's natural as one goes through yeshiva to have different rebbeim, and even if, you know, and different rebbeim have different drachim and different hashkafas, that's okay. One can't kula shop. You know, that's not what we're talking about. But you know, it's okay at those stages of life. As one, you know, deepens their connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and through their years in yeshiva, and they become a little more stable, and figuring out exactly what they want their life to be, and they're connecting to their who's going to be their rebbe for life, and who's going to be which type of rebbe shares the hashkafa, or I should say, which type of rebbe do I share his hashkafa with that I'm comfortable with, and I see myself in that world, and at that point, as we go through, so then already one has to, you know, try to have some type of consistency. Again, it doesn't mean that all one shilas. If there's an expert in Hilchos Shabbos or in Hilchos Nida to relate to a certain rebbe, you know, and all the shilas could go there, so that's fine. But in terms of, you know, beyond that, as one gets through life, I would say, you know, because one becomes, you know, junior, senior in YU, graduate, as we get older, then you need a rebbe. Need a rebbe. In the days of WhatsApp, you know, how many shilas? There's no excuse not to have a connection to a rebbe. And again, that's something that, again, the years in yeshiva, I don't think there's any problem, because, like, that's just the mitzias, and you with different rebbeim, and that's fine and good. But again, as one goes, one has to, one establishes a relationship with different rebbeim, and it happens to be, you know, many of our, you know, some of those rebbeim that we ask shilas to aren't the rebbeim that we were in their shir in YU. But because you connect to certain rebbeim. Certain rebbeim are more into psak halacha. But again, at a certain stage of life, when one is still searching, I think it's okay to have different rebbeim, even if a previous psak count go counter an earlier one. But as one continues, I think one has to establish something solid. And just to connect this to a question later on, which I think it relates to. Where's that question, which is a huge one. What is the most significant problem facing today's modern Orthodox community? Okay, so I'm not going to talk about the most. I don't know what the most is. I'm just going to talk about one challenge. But again, every population and every group of Am Yisrael, and again, I'm more, I'd say, I don't know, for 11 years I've been in the Dati Leumi, as compared to Modern Orthodox, not exactly the same thing, but whatever, Lamaisa, I was for a number of decades, first few decades of my life, I lived here. So one of the big challenges, I think, that the movement has in general, and this is something that one needs to look for in a Rebbe, and especially a Rebbe in Psak, is a Rebbe that has certain fealty to the Mesorah, and certain feeling that I'm part of a chain, of an illustrious train of the Mesorah going back to Moshe Rabbeinu. You know, too often, especially because it could be, it works together, because let's say the Dati Lumi Modern Orthodox world believes more in the independent thinking of the Pashat Yid, and the confidence that is given. And as Rav Aaron Lichtenstein writes in one of his farim, do you look at life as a minefield, or do you look at life as a place of opportunity? It's just different hashkafas in life. If you look at it as the latter, and life is a thing to go out and conquer, and the rubs v'chivshua, and make the world a better place, and you go out there. So a lot of this, it just breeds the feeling of independence, even in the world of Torah, and even in the world of interpreting Torah, and in the world of Psak. And that's why a very difficult or challenging challenge for our world is the belief, as you know, you might relate it to what we learned about last week from Parshas Korach, the Rav's article about the common sense rebellion, as the Rav writes. You know, Korach did not question Bezalel's architectural skills, right? Korach wouldn't have gone in and suggested how to do a brain surgery if he never went to medical school. But all of a sudden, you know, he learned 12 years in day school, and he did this, and all of a sudden he's the Rosh Kabahag, and all of a sudden he can make rules, and I think it should be this Torah and that Torah and this decision, and it doesn't make sense, the Tcheles and the Mezuzahs. So again, one has to have a Rebbe connecting the two questions that is kafuf to the Mesorah, someone who feels the authority of Am Yisrael. All you have to read is Rav Moshe Feinstein's Hakdam to the Igros Moshe, where he writes in the first paragraph, I don't know why I'm writing this book, I don't know why people are asking me questions. But then he writes what a posek has to do. He says, I'll write my answers because, you know, I went through the sugya with Yirat Shamayim and Kovid Rosh. And you feel as you read that. You know, I once again, one of the major poskim of our community, mentioned, I was once talking to his wife, and his wife said it's not uncommon that he would get, is one of the big poskim in Hilchos Nida, he would get a serious shaila in Hilchos Nida. He would go into a study. He would come out an hour later with his shirt off, just in his tzitzis, sweating. Says, I think I can matir. That's somebody who feels the achrayus, not just somebody who cavalierly can make a psak and say, well, this is what I think. And even if there's a minority shita in the Rishonim, we go by the Shulchan Aruch and the Poskim and the Mesorah. And again, I think that's a challenge, because in some circles within the Frum Shomrei Halacha world, there's a little too much independence given. Remember just, I went to visit with my wife the year before Rav Cooperman was Nifter. He wrote the Start of Michlala, and he's the Meshech Chachma. So we went to visit him in the hospital. My wife was close with him. So he told us, we're talking to him, and he says, let me tell you why I started Michlala, 19, whatever it was, 60-something. He says, I was teaching in a different school, and we were teaching Chumash, and one of the girls suggested something. I said, yeah, but Rashi says this. He says, yeah, that's what Rashi says, but that's what I say. So he's like, whoa. He's like, there's something wrong here. It's not like Machlokas, me and Rashi. Right? I need to create a system that there's a certain respect. And it doesn't mean that we don't say original creative pshatim. Again, there's a difference also in the base matters and a difference in normative practice. But again, getting back to this question, I'm sorry I'm taking a little too much time, but again, I think it's an important message for our day and age. It has to do with a lot of different issues, which we don't have to get into now, but how we view Psak Halacha and who we trust and who we relate to. But again, getting back to the question, we have to have a Rebbe that has the weight of the Mesorah on his shoulders, and the weight of knowing Psak Halacha on his shoulders. And that's, there's more to say. Maybe I'll stop and let Rabbi leave us talk a little bit.
That's the biggest
problem facing modern orthodoxy?
I think it's...
Okay, I reserve the right to give different answers to that question if that question comes up. But the,
it's only one.
On this question, in terms of Pesach, so Razor said it very, very well, of course. It's natural that you're going to ask a lot of different people. You know, Rabbi Sabalovsky Shlita spoke in my shul once, and I went and found his bio on YU Torah. I have no idea who wrote that bio. I'm very confident it was not Rabbi Sabalovsky who wrote it. Normally, that's not the case. Normally, the rabbi himself wrote the bio. It's a little insider information over there. So, you know, if it gets too flowery, you know, maybe ask some kashas about the rabbi. Rabbi Sablovsky's bio said that, and he told me he had never heard it before because I introduced him a bit. It said, I don't remember the exact lesson, I'm sure someone could pull it up over here, that he seamlessly combines the derech of his two great rebbeim of Shechter and of Willig, and like I never thought of Rabbi Sablovsky that way before, of how he in a certain way presents the very best of what each of Rabbi Shechter and Rabbi Willig had to offer their talmidim, and he sort of incorporated them both seamlessly into this one personality. And you know what, he wouldn't be Rabbi Sablovsky if he only had Rabbi Willig, and he wouldn't be Rabbi Sablovsky if he only had Rabbi Shechter. It is important that a person have multiple influences in order to find who you are, and that you accept the multiple influences. Having said that, when it comes to Pesach Halacha, it is important not necessarily they have one person. As Rabbi Razin said, certainly not to kula shop, and there are halachas about this. You go through the sugya chacham sha'asar in chaver rashi lahatir, and there's probably an iser on the shoel as well, that if you're shoel l'chacham va'asar, you're not allowed to be shoel to another chacham to be matir, and it might even work in the opposite direction. If you sometimes people chumra shop, that's also not the right thing to do. You have to have a certain willingness to accept what a posik says, but even though you do go to more than one person, and you have relationships with multiple people and you trust the psak of multiple people, it's probably best, I would say definitely best, if the people that you go to are within the same world. They're working within the same framework. They think about things in the same way. You know, there are many, many issues that our rebbeim disagree with each other about. Just use Rabbi Shechter and Rabbi Willig as an example. Many, many halachic issues that they disagree with each other about. But they think about things in more or less the same way. They have the same mesorah. I know that it bothers Rabbi Shechter a lot sometimes when people bring in someone who just thinks about things very, very differently, as great a Talmud Chacham as they may be, and start incorporating that into the Masorah, into the way that halacha is conveyed. And you know, he'll say the expression, it's against the Masorah of our yeshiva. What's the Masorah of our, it's a different derech hapsak. It's not the way the Rav taught us to think. Not that it's wrong, but there's a certain Masorah. And if people are going to be going to Rabbi Shechter and Rabbi Willig for Piskei Halacha, then the other people they go to for Piskei Halacha should at least be thinking along the same lines. So I mentioned the other day, someone asked me, when do you ask Rav Asher Weiss? When do you ask Rav Shechter? When do you ask Rabbi Willig? And when do you ask Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein? So the answer is that for Rav Asher Weiss, Rav Shechter, Rav Willig is the first one I see, whichever one I have access to sooner. Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein is a gon olam. The guy, the man knows everything. He's unbelievable. And the sweetest Jew you would ever meet. But I don't go to him for Pesach Halacha, because he has a very different way of thinking about things than my rebbeim have. He is a great posek for a massive community of people. He's just not my posek. So I'll go to him when I think the question will entertain him, and the answer will be enjoyable, and he'll always have a different way of thinking about it. It's great for limud, but for psak, it's very important that you go to someone within a certain framework. I think most of your experiences in your yeshivas, most of the rebbeim are pretty much coming from the same basic. That's not really true. There are a lot of yeshivas where there are rebbeim that come from very different places, but you'll find your way. You'll find. You'll find where you're most comfortable.
What's your approach to learning Chassidus, and then parentheses, like a Chassidus Parsha Sefer, as opposed to a Litvish Parsha Sefer?
You're going to answer this mostly. I'll just say very, very quickly. I'm not the person to ask about this. It never spoke to me. I've always had a hard time with the Kabbalistic concepts and with, you know, even the simpler Hasidic Sfarim. I'm not talking about Nesiv Shalom. Nesiv Shalom is for everybody. But like, you know, even the Sfasemes and Noam Elimelech, like, it was very hard for me to connect. So I don't really... I don't really know much about learning Chassidus. What does talk to me a lot are many of the messages of Chassidus, and I think that most of those messages of positivity, of not dwelling on the negative, and these kinds of things, pretty much all of those messages can be found in Divrei Chazal. They can be found in the classic Musar Sfarim as well. The more Kabbalistic things, it's just not my... It's not to my level, I guess. It's on a different wavelength than I'm on, so I'm not the person to speak to about that. So maybe Rabbi Rosner will have something to say.
Again, different parts of Torah. We're just talking about different drachim. There are different areas of Torah that talk to different people. And in terms of quoting, I've been again. I try to quote in the Parsha Shirim and other Shirim, try to quote from a vast array of sources amongst the Rishonim and the Achronim, from right to left, up to down. So again, to show that there's a huge range, you know, what a person connects to specifically, so you have to see if it connects. Again, obviously it should be something that one understands, one connects to, and I didn't even understand the question as Chassidish in terms of, let's say, Dafka Kabbalah or deeper than that. Obviously, if there's Kabbalah, if there's, you know, items that are beyond, you know, that's not for the novice, and there has to be stages of development of the Sefer. But I think an important point to mention is that, two points. Number one, there's a difference between learning content of certain Svarim and that moving over to practice. You know, there's a difference between, you know, somebody's into certain, you know, Svarim, that's fine, you know, if they are part of the Shalshelas HaMesorah and their great, you know, Admorim to Litvish Gedolim, whatever one connects to, I think, as long as, you know, Klal Yisrael as a whole has accepted these greats as part of the Mesorah, it's fine, and everybody, to have that then affect my practice in terms of taking on certain minhagim that is not from my world, that already is something different. And one has to be very careful between the content that one learns and the practice. You know, my minhagim are my minhagim, and I go by, you know, whatever world I'm from, or whatever my parents and my yeshivot. But, you know, so learning Chassidus and learning, again, as Reb Leibowitz said, I'm also not a bucky at all in the world. Various svarim, you know, I think my grandmother came from the Noam Elimelech. I have it somewhere in the genes. But these are all great gedolei olam, and you know there is svarim that also explain it. So matovu manaim, one wants to branch out and learn different types of Torah. But that's wonderful. But again, point number one, it shouldn't affect the practice except in the general way, like positivity and to bring us up. But just another point that I think is the part of the assumption of the question, which I think is a very, especially in one's years in yeshiva, you know, to say that, you know, does one learn Chassidus? So if we were sitting in a Chassidus based Medrash, you know, maybe the question would be, what if somebody says they want to learn Nefesh HaChayim? What would you say? You know, kind of from the opposite or a different world. What if somebody says, you know, something else, you know, the philosophy of the Rishonim and Mor Nevuchim or the Tanya. I want us to be very careful to not to, you know, if something is, if there is a corpus of Torah or a type of learning or a Derech HaLimud that is part of the Shalshal, part of the larger Mesorah of Am Yisrael, even if it's not mine, not to Chas V'Shalom reject it or put it down or say it's wrong. You know, one has to be very careful. Again, sometimes someone has a Rebbe, hopefully not often, but there are some great Talmidei Chachamim that give off the impression that if you're not learning like I learned, then you're not learning. And my derech is correct and the other drachim are not correct. That is a very dangerous attitude. Very dangerous. I was in the schus to be in Rav Rosenzweig's shir for a number of years, and he learned, he has a very different derech than, you know, at that time, you know, none of his talmidim were rabbeim yet. But again, very different than almost all the other rabbeim. But he never ever gave the impression that it's this derech and not any other derech. You know, every derech has to be honored and respected and cherished. And it's part of the circle at the end of Maseches Tainis, Zeshem, Nagilam Nischa Bishuasa, Chashprachu in the middle, and the circle, all the Sadiqim are dancing. Every point on the circle. If you're missing one, then you're missing the whole circle. And that applies to Derech Alimud, that applies to types of Torah, parts of Torah, like the question of Chasidus. Chasidus has a place. That's part of the Olam HaTorah. And every area has a place, and one has to be very careful if one has a Rebbe or one has a yeshiva. You know, and I've seen, you know, let's say somebody has a Rebbe, and then they come from, they'll come from a three or four or five different places in Eretz Yisrael, and they come back to YU, has many Rebbeim, just as an example. Or Landers, is that, and for life, or, you know, there's a high school in Israel like this also. Like, after the boy is in this certain place, they can never learn again, because there's no Rebbe that I connect to in the world, because this Rebbe has this, and he gave off the hashtashpa that there's no other way to do it. That's very dangerous from the Rebbe's point of view, from the Talmud's point of view. There are many drachen that we have, and we have to honor and respect. There might be one that I'm more connected to, but elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim in darkei halimud, elu ve'elu divrei Elokim chayim in tochan halimud, and one has to, even if not everything I connect to as much as others, it doesn't mean that it's right or wrong. It's different, and you know, we have to do our best to try to appreciate as many parts of Torah that we can.
I just add, I once had the opportunity to interview Rav Moshe Weinberger for a podcast. I do these podcasts once in a while for David Lichtenstein because I like to talk to interesting people. And when else am I going to get Rav Moshe Weinberger to sit and talk to me for an hour? So it was a great excuse. And one of the things that he mentioned was that there was a boy learning in the yeshiva, and he had a tanya by his makom. And one of the rebbeim walked by, saw the tanya by the boy's makom, knocked it off the table onto the floor, and said, "This is not our Masorah." And he said just how damaging that was to that Talmud to have such an encounter, because here's someone who's obviously searching for his place in Torah. He found something that's talking to him, that's talking to his neshama. He found something that he's connecting with. And then the Rebbe said, "This is not our Masorah." So what Rabbi Razin just said really resonates, in the sense that for Limud, if it works for you, it can be part of your Masorah. As far as Hanhaga, that may be a different story. But for Limud, if it's part of the Masorah of Klal Yisrael, and it's been that way for many, many years, so of course it could be part of your Masorah, but a person should learn Mashal B'chafetz.
Anti-Semitism has dramatically increased throughout the world within the last couple of years, specifically in America. In addition to the myriad of other reasons pushing one to move to Israel, is rising anti-Semitism a reason in of itself to make Aliyah before it's quote-unquote too late, or is this too extreme of an approach?
See you first.
When we made Aliyah, I wrote an article. Is it the pull or the push? Is it the pull or the push? Now, the Rav Kook talks about Tekab shofar gadol l'cheruseinu, different types of shofars, different levels of shofars, different shofars that talked about. What's the shofar gadol? The pull. Meaning when Jews go to Eretz Yisrael because they feel the pull, they feel that they have to be there. They feel like, I just mentioned to somebody, you know, Israel Day here in camp. So even during lunch, they were playing songs, and I just saw, like, some of the Cubs, they're shaking this big Israeli flag. And once you get it inside, whenever you see it, it's just like, it hits a chord. It hits a chord, and you realize what type of prophetic times we're living in. And it's the job of every Jew to feel that pull. Soloveitchik writes, it's quoted, I didn't see it quoted anywhere else, in the Bencher. They put out a Berchon, the Rav from Boston put out the Berchon from the Rav. It's in there on No Delacha. Eretz Chemda Tova Rechava. What does it mean, Eretz Chemda? Eretz Chemda Tova Rechava. The desirous. So where does Chemda come up? So as many say, you look at the first time it comes up in the Torah. What's Chemda? The Eitz Hadas was Nechmad Lamara. What's Nechmad? Nechmad? So the Rav explained, there was a inexplicable magnetic pull that the tree had on Chava. I can't explain it. She just needed to eat the fruit. It was like she couldn't not. It was just pulling. And Eretz Chemda. There's a magnetic pull that we have towards Eretz Yisrael. And we have to have towards Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Chemda Tova Rechava. And it's something that it's not, and it's, we see it. It's not, it's unheard of in the history of the world. 2,000 years after a people, you know, are thrown out of their lands, they're still praying to go back. You see any Greeks throughout the world, you know, since praying to go back? You see any Romans in the world? It's just unfathomable. But the pull is always inside. Right? The pull, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows, he has these running the world, but the pull is always inside. So anti-Semitism, that's the push. Rachmana Litzlan, many times in history, it's been the push and not the pull. The goal is the pull. We're not prophets, we're not Nevi'im. You know, yes, the Meshech Chachma said, you know, Meshech Chachma was Nifter in the teens. The Meshech Chachma wrote famously in Bechuk Kosai, Kehim Choshim Sheberlin Hi Yerushalayim. And, you know, they say he forecast, whatever it was, he alluded to the fact that people forgot that Yerushalayim is Yerushalayim, and Choshim Sheberlin Hi Yerushalayim. But again, we're not prophets. No Gullus in the past 2,000 years has ended well. No Gullus has ended well. We have to recognize that. We have to recognize that as great as America has been over the past hundreds of years, you know, it's all part of the divine plan also. Somebody sent me this week, 2 days ago, Friday, sent me this. I didn't get to look it up. There's a whole article about it. Think about what the message is. There's some deep message. I haven't fleshed it out yet. I haven't thought about it. July 4th, 1776. What was the Hebrew date? What was the Hebrew date? Shavasa Batamos. Shavasa Batamos was July 4th, 1776. On the birthday of the Gullus that has been the best for Am Yisrael, the one Savior, that thank God there were Jews in America before World War II, or else we all would have been in Europe. Kadosh Baruch Hu was already laying the foundations. In the Churban, there was already Zaria. So I'm not exactly sure of the message, but there's something there. There's something there. But either way, we're not Nevi'im. Do we know that there's something going on in the world? 100%. Well, for the past 150 years, there's something going on. You know, we have to recognize that. Right? Rabbi Abba in Sanhedrin says the greatest raya of the beginning of the process is that there's going to be blossoming. Right? The Gemara says it beferish. The Navi says Yecheskel says it beferish. For 2,000 years, from the Churban until the mid 1800s, nothing grew. Right? Mark Twain says it's the most desolate land, and all of a sudden, there's blossoming. Something's happening. We're not prophets. No, we don't have a prophet. A couple years ago, it was in Girls Month. It's a Girls Month. It was a few days before Tisha B'Av. I think I might have told this story last year. And I remember one of the girl division heads runs in. Razor, Razor! You have to talk to the girls. I'm like, what's going on? He said, you didn't hear? No. There was a Kabbalist from Israel that put out in the email, Mashiach's coming on Erev Tisha B'Av. The girls are going crazy. Half the girls are packing. Half the girls are crying. Half the girls just don't know what. And they're like, are we going to be able to eat pizza? Like, what if I'm on a different eagle than my parents? I mean, they're going. And then another division head came in. Like, the whole camp was. So I remember I was in front. I had to get all the girls together. And I said, number one, we don't, halavai, but we don't. We don't have Nevuah anymore. There's nobody that says that's a Navi, Bizman Hazeh. Nobody knows the future. If somebody says they know the future, then they're being irresponsible. Because we don't have Nevuah. Nevuah ended. Chagai Zechariah Malachi. Number one. Number two, we have to recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has everything planned out. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's in charge. Everything planned out. According to most poskim, we're going to eat pizza when Mashiach comes. And you have to worry about. And number three, we don't know what it's going to be, but it's going to be awesome. It's going to be amazing. Again, Mashiach's not here yet, because when we hear Mashiach's coming, we say, you know what, let me just marry off all my kids, and then I'll, you know, then Mashiach could come. You know, we have to be Mesader, everything, come on, I just want to, like, you know, finish my degree, go to the Smicha. I mean, we have to lay Mashiach. Lamaisa, what's going on? Something's happening. we can't interpret. We could just say, you know, halavai, every Jew should have the pole. And every Jew should recognize what it says in every part, like Rav Shechter always says, in every parsha it says you should move to Eretz Yisrael. Every parsha in the Torah. Well, you have to, it's a chiddush, you have to, every parsha in the Torah talks about Eretz Yisrael. So we have to recognize the pull. And again, even if we're not there right now, and it's not so simple, maybe we'll get to that question if we have time, but every situation is different, but one has to recognize that there should be the pull. You know, and if not, we have to work on ourselves to have the pull. Again, when we act on it, that's a detail that we have to figure out exactly when is appropriate to act on it. But to have the pull there, you know, halavai, we should get there with the pull and not the push.
Once again, I'm not nearly as qualified as Rabbi Rosner to answer this question, answer any of these, but particularly, obviously, this question for obvious reasons. Although it does strike me that if the biggest concern of Mashiach coming is that we're not going to be able to eat our pizza, I think we found the biggest problem in the modern Orthodox community. I guess depending on your interpretation of mitzvos, potatoes, thus above it, we might be able to eat pepperoni pizza when Mashiach comes. But I don't know. As Rabbi Rosner said, there's two sides to this question. You know, the question was formulated: should we be so terrified of America that we need to get out of here? Which is very different than should we be so inspired by what's happening in Eretz Yisrael and Kibbutz Golios that we're seeing with our own eyes that we should want to be a part of it. Those are very different ways of formulating the question. I think being terrified of America, I think, is a little alarmist. You know, depending who you ask on the political spectrum, either the right wing is the most anti-Semitic, group of people that has ever existed, or the left wing is the most anti-Semitic group of people that has ever existed. And that's just the country that we live in right now, that everyone likes to paint everyone else with this very vicious, vicious brush. So I think it's a little alarmist, but as Rabbi Rosner said, and this was pointed out to me by someone in my shul a few years ago before he made Aliyah, where he was struggling and he very, very much wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael, and his wife very much did not want to go, and he was just saying, no galus has ever ended well. I know that my grandchildren will thank me for it. I'm pretty confident my children will thank me for it if we go. It just has never ended well. And, you know, a Jew who sees a little bit realizes that. We realize that the ride doesn't last forever in galus. It's not meant to last forever, but that's not the reason we go to Eretz Yisrael. We go to Eretz Yisrael because that's where the Jewish people belong. We go to Eretz Yisrael because HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a home for us. So yeah, we could eat pita on Israel Day. We can march in a parade. We could eat blue and white cookies on as if that contributes anything. But we could do these little tokens. But obviously, there's nothing that that matches the very simple fact that that's where we belong. You know, we know where the future is. We know where Klal Yisrael's future is. And I just think the healthy way to think about it is that people there are good reasons why people, for whatever reason, at different stages in life, maybe can't or shouldn't. Rabbi Marcus certainly spoke about one on Shalosh Shudis, after speaking to many of his Rebbeim and Gedolei Torah, he was told not to go. I do find that most people who have an incredible passion for it will end up being Ola to Eretz Yisrael, but the healthy way to think about it is a Jew's default place, the place where a Jew belongs, is Eretz Yisrael. That's our default. The question is, do we have a good reason not to be? You know, it's not natural to think that way. The natural way to think is, okay, if I live in the five towns, my default is the five towns. I would need a reason to move to Teaneck. I would need a reason to move to California, and I would need a reason to move to Eretz Yisrael. And that's a natural way for a person to think, but we have to sort of reorient ourselves, I think, and retrain our way of thinking. That's not our default is not where we are. Our default is where we ought to be, and then we can start thinking about whether there's a good reason why we aren't where we ought to be.
Just one hosafa. Again, I don't know if we're going to get to the other question, so I just wanted to add this. Again, when we made Aliyah, remember, my wife and I spoke about this a lot, that we really try, and we've tried. I've spoken about it many times over the past number of years, never to chas v'shalom talk down or judge or anything. Everybody has their own package, like we spoke about before. Everybody has their own family and all decisions, and it's not simple. And we always said the way of bringing is by inspiring. And just one idea that I thought about this past Shabbos, but I gave the drasha last Shabbos in shul. I don't think I get to speak to the Masmidim. So last Shabbos I put it in the Lubavitcher Rebbe on his 25th yard site. So there was a story that actually Rabbi Zakatinsky pointed out to me on that I saw online, that there was a bar mitzvah boy in the 1950s, right after the Rebbe became Rebbe. And there was a bar mitzvah boy, and he went to meet the Rebbe. His father took him to get a bracha. He set up this boy, set up the story when he was much older. He said, "I went to get a bracha from the Rebbe, and the Rebbe gave me a bracha." And as I was walking out, the Rebbe says to me, "Do you like baseball?" And he turned, he said, "Yeah, why is the Babich Rebbe asking me if I like baseball?" He said, "What team do you like?" At that time, there were two teams in New York. He said, "The Dodgers or the Yankees?" He says, "I like the... I forgot which one it was. I like the Yankees."
"The Dodgers."
"It was the Dodgers?" "Okay." "It was the Dodgers." "Okay." So he says, "Yeah, you ever been to a game?" He says, "Yeah, we went about a month ago." So he said, "Yeah, how was it?" He says, "It was terrible. The Dodgers were losing in the fifth inning, so we left. They were losing 10-2. He's like, "You left? How'd you leave?" He says, "I don't know, we left." He says, "Did the players leave?" It's like, "The players? Players can't leave." Like, "Why not? You left. Why can't the players leave?" So they're playing the game. They're playing the game. I'm just a fan. They're playing the game. Says Lubavitcher Rebbe, in life, play the game. Don't be a fan. Stay there till the very end. Don't just watch from the sidelines. So Lubavitcher Rebbe told him. A little bit of having the schus to live in Eretz Yisrael, one really feels that you're playing the game. And you're not watching from the sidelines. You know, maybe we haven't been able to play the game for 2,000 years, or maybe the center of Am Yisrael, we're finally playing the game again. And it's an intangible that I wouldn't have been able to say 12 years ago. But once you're there, and once you experience what life is there, you know, and your kids experience the realness and the richness of a whole society in Eretz Yisrael, you know, it's like you really feel like you're playing the game. And we wish, and we daven for the day that all Am Yisrael is playing the game.
It goes without saying that both Rav Leibowitz and Rav Rosner give very well-known and well-liked Daf Yomi Shiurim made available to the public online. Do you have a method of doing Chazara on the day's Daf that enables you to retain the information? And if so, what is it, Leibowitz?
I feel like I'm saying this by every question, but this one, again, maybe even more than the Eretz Yisrael one, Rabbi Rosner is more the person to answer this question than I am. I give a daf yomi shir, and I'm embarrassed to admit that very often, the second the shir is over, I've forgotten everything that I've said. Rabbi Rosner takes bechinas. So he actually works on remembering what he learned. But I'll tell you what I would do if I had the discipline and the inclination and the I think it's healthy. I think it's important that whenever you're processing a tremendous amount of material, to be organized in the way you think about that material. So. One thing that I've always done on every daf, every amud in shas, every daf in shas, is to, and this I learned from Rav Baruch Simon when I was in early admissions here in YU. Rav Simon was my rabbi, and he told us essentially that there's no way you're going to remember every detail of everything you learned, but it's worthwhile to take a look at the amud. And, you know, even if you could read every single line, and I could read what it says in every single word, I could translate every word, take a step back and say, okay, what did it just say over here? You know, how many sugis are on this staff? And, you know, was there one mahalik in the Gemara, two mahalik in the Gemara? Just boil it down to three or four sentences. three or four main points of each amud. And what I like to do is I'll write on the side of the page, you know, where that sugya is, just a couple of words about that sugya. And when you chazer, you could, sometimes you'll have time to actually chazer by reading through the Gemara, and it doesn't take that long if you know the Gemara fluently. You can read through a Gemara that you know well. You can read a daf of Gemara in just a couple of minutes if you know it very, very well. But even if you don't have time to read the Gemara, or you want to chazer 10-block Gemara, and you don't have time to do that, you can go through the main points on the margins of your Gemara, and like your mind will immediately go there. You'll be like, oh, that kasha, three answers, okay, and then we discuss that. And it will immediately, you'll see that when you organize the information in that way, so it has a dual effect. The first effect is that it makes you think about it to the point where you have to break it down into those segments, which means that you have to process the information differently than when you're just reading word by word. So in the processing, it's very helpful, and then in the remembering, it's very helpful because it's a great tool for chazara. It's probably also a very, very good idea to be mechayev yourself with bechinas. Again, I'm guilty of not doing this, but it's probably also a very, very good idea to do that, because you can very easily convince yourself that you know it well, or you know it well enough, but you don't really. And it's helpful to have something outside of you, outside of your own mind, that sort of certifies whether you do or don't know it well enough. I can tell you, in my shul, we started recently this past Sukkot, thanks to Rav Eliada Goldwicht, a Smichas Chaver program, where there are many yesodos of the program. It's a wildly successful program. Rav Eliada is like, he's a superstar in terms of the Harbatzas HaTorah that he's doing. But one of the yesodos is that it's taking people who've been out of yeshiva for 10 years, 20 years, and they're taking bechinas for the first time since their, you know, the bar exam, or for the first time since whatever exams they took in school. And it's such a mechayiv, and they get such a geschmack out of it, and such a sense of accomplishment out of it. So I think that's also very valuable. So I would recommend reading Ben Torah for Life, Rav Lapiansky's book about how to succeed in learning as you're going through life. He pretty much outlines everything Rav Eliada did with this Michas Chaver, which is remarkable, to succeed in learning for life. But as far as Daf Yomi is concerned, it's just a lot of material. So it does require chazar, but it also requires processing things properly the first time through.
Okay. First is, the question wasn't exactly about this. I'll get to that. But again, I don't, for the years in yeshiva, which most of the guys are in yeshiva now, I would not recommend Daf Yomi unless someone is, you know, has an atiyah towards it. And the greatest thing about Daf Yomi is that it's mechayev you to learn every day. And there are different goals of learning at different stages of life. In one's years in yeshiva, you know, the goal isn't to learn very, very fast. The goal is to build up one's mind and becoming familiar with the yesodos of Shas and many different other goals. But Daf Yomi, unless somebody has a netiyah towards it, the greatest is that it's mechayev you. In yeshiva, you're learning anyway. But bikona the mesechta. Go to the Masechta that you're learning. Yeah, but Kiyas B'Ian. So that's number one. And if one wants it, when I remember I started my Shana Aleph, which was very valuable. I remember one of the who mentioned it. But do Mishnayos. Before Dafim Mishnayos. Two Mishnayos a day. Basically 6 years you finish us with a Chazara program. Two Mishnayos a day with Chazaring a Perek a day. And how that exactly works, we'll talk about another time. But again, two new Mishnayos a day. And as Rabbi Leibowitz mentioned, I used to have these little, like, Kahati green ones. I think now they're blue. But you underline in them. You underline the lines on the bottom that you want to remember. So when you chazer the Mishnah, and you chazer the underlined lines. Somebody once said, if you know Kahati, you know Shas. Again, the basics. So again, that's more handleable than Daf Yomi in the years in Yeshiva. Mishnayos are so crucial. They're so important. You start at the beginning of a Seder. You don't have to start with Zeraim, you know, because that gets a little tedious. Start with Nezikin, you know, start with, don't start with Nashim either, because the first Mishnah will already make it more challenging. But again, Nizikin. I love Kutchim. I love Mishnayos Kutchim. But anyway, start with Nizikin, start with Moed, whatever it is, and just go two Mishnayos a day and you build and you chazer. You chazer, you know, we could talk about a specific chazara program. But that's number one. So again, the years in yeshiva shouldn't be focused on the top, I don't think. Again, it's if one has that, then one can. But again, now getting to the daf, so how does one chazer? And again, one, you know, it needs time. Again, the best way to remember is to give a shiur. Because if one is in a community, as you get older and you're in an environment, if there's somebody, even once a week, you know, sometimes some guys give, some shuls, they split, okay, I give your daf on Tuesdays. They know that daf so much better. Because they prepared it, they put into it. If you ever want to really start being on the level of remembering more, as Rabbi Leibowitz said, mechayvim, number one mechayv is to give a shiur. To give a shiur that you have to prepare it more, you have to review it more, number one. But number two is to have some type of set schedule. But I think, again, there's a source, I forgot exactly where it is, maybe Rabbi Leibowitz can mention, right? Why is it that the Gemara says in Chagiga they have to review 101 times. But why, on the top of every Daf and Shas, Rashi, the longer lines of Rashi and Tosfos are four lines. We notice that every Daf and Shas, it's four wider lines, then the Rashi becomes skinny. Why four? Does that come from? You have to learn it four times as a basis. Learn it four times. So, I remember in yeshivas, let's not take Daf Yomi. Let's say most of our doing Daf Yomi now. The Bekiyas of yeshiva. Always found it very valuable to, let's say you do about an Amid a day in Bekiyas Seder. About an Amid a day, so every week you do about two blot, two and a half blot or so. Sometime between Thursday night or Friday morning until Motzi Shabbos, review what you did that week. You learn it once, I forgot a step, review it that night. Because if you review that night what you did in the afternoon, it should be pretty fresh. So the day you learn it, that night, that weekend, and then sometime later, start another Seder, a half an hour day somewhere, with a chavrusa to start again from like where you did like a month before. So you have four times. That type of learning, so it's you did it right away, you keep it a little fresh at the end of the week, Friday and Shabbos, over Friday and Shabbos, I'm telling you, my shana bet, I did this, it was unbelievable. And you stick to it, every Friday, wherever you're going out for Shabbos, you're in for Shabbos, sometime from Friday morning till Motzi Shabbos, wherever I am, on the bus, I stay in 2 hours Friday morning, and it shouldn't take that long, because just did it that week, you chazer it, you bolster it, you solidify it in the brain, the end of that week, and then a month later, it makes a difference. So then you have those four times, you know, if one can. Again, if you're giving a daf shir, then you have to prepare it, that's one, then giving the daf is two. If you have some type of chazara program, they say, you know, a week later or so, three, and you get, again, tests are great. The tests are great. You know, Dirshu is an amazing, again, it's a big mechayev. It's not easy, but we have to push ourselves. We have to try to push ourselves, and again, I only take the monthly tests. There are those that take the cumulative tests. It's every 4 months. It's every 120. And then there's the ones that takes the cumulative, like, they're like out of control. And then there's the Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi, I'm the Pasha Jew, Rashi track. And then there's the Rashi Tosfos track. So again, halavai, we should all get there. And that there are Rashi Tosfos track on all 27:11. You know, and Hashem, right, the daf starting again soon. But again, whatever stage of life you're at, there are stages of life that you can do it. My son, when he was sitting on the Gaza border for 8 months, you know, now he just finished Hesder. But when he was there, so they started, they were up to Sanhedrin, they decided, you know what, let's start Sanhedrin together. And a lot of them are still going. Sanhedrin, Makkah, Shavuah, cities of Odazara, Avos, Harios, Mizvachim, and Afos, Chulin. So, in the army, you know, it's a machayev. And it keeps you learning, it keeps you ahead in learning. So, at certain stages of life, Daf Yomi is amazing. Get the years in yeshiva, you're learning other things. But again, you have to tap some type of chazara program is valuable.
Let me just add two quick things to what Raza said. First of all, I think in the Stipler's letters, in the Karyana Digrisa, he quotes that Gemara in Erevin about learning something four times. The Gemara doesn't talk about the lines on the top of the page. The Odei Shlomar, that's how the printer decided in the Vilna Shas. But, you know, the... the Stipler writes that the four times is not even to remember it, it's just to understand it. He writes in all of his letters, the Stipler's letters are very repetitive because it was letters that he wrote to Yeshiva Bachram, so a lot of Yeshiva Bachram asked the same questions. So they printed all of them. So all the Yeshiva Bachram said, how do I learn? So he told them all the same thing, how to learn. So one of the things he mentioned is four times just to know, just to understand it the first time, because you have to learn four times. But another thing, when we went to visit Rabbi Saul Reisman in Camp Aguda a couple of weeks ago, I don't know if guys chapped, you know, how important it is, how important all the things he said are, but one of the things that he said that you may have forgotten already, because you may not have realized the chashivas of it, is he said that when he has something exciting that he just learned, something that excites him, he makes sure to tell it over to someone. I mean, you're going to find yourself having conversations with people. So tell it over to someone. Just speak to someone about it. He added, even if the person doesn't care about it, I'm going to tell it over to them. Because when you're telling it over to somebody, that's your chazara. And that's, you know, that helps you internalize it. It's like similar to Rabbi Raz was saying about giving a shir. Even if you can't give a formal shir, you can always tell it to somebody. And I think that's another major key. Even if you're not telling it to somebody, we remember things that we think about. If when we're learning, and then when we stop learning, the learning is no longer on our mind at all, we're not going to remember it very well. But if we're thinking and learning, you know, if we're walking around, that's what's on our mind, then we'll remember it much better. You don't have to be a genius. You just have to have avas haTorah. If you have enough love of Torah that it's something that you want to be thinking about all the time, that, and you want to talk about it with other people, then you're much more likely to remember the learning.
I believe Rav Rosner already mentioned something about this question, but what's the most significant problem facing today's modern Orthodox Jewish community? Rev.
Is this the last? I mean, we're over time, aren't we?
Whenever.
Rav Rosner has to catch
up. I'm good.
I don't know. what Rav Rosner said is good. I was just making a joke before. Rav Rosner said
I have one other point to make.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe I'll mention quickly, and then we'll get to Rav Rosner's point. And I think there are certain, you know, we're a work in progress. The modern Orthodox community, centrist Orthodox, whatever you want to call it, we're a work in progress. I could tell you that we have a major PR problem with the rest of Orthodoxy. You know, I got an email last week. How do you explain why in modern Orthodoxy it's okay to, you know, dress in a non-sneous way and to go to co-ed camps and mix swimming and, you know, why is that okay in modern Orthodoxy? So that's a PR problem because it's not okay in modern Orthodoxy, meaning not certainly not by the Rabbanim and the Gedolim of our community. You know, who are the modern Orthodox Gedolim, Soloveitchik, Rav Lichtenstein, Rav Schechter, none of them think any of that is okay. So we have a PR problem, but the reason we have a PR problem is because we have a problem. We have a problem in terms of commitment to certain areas of halacha. We're very strong in other areas. We're a work in progress. So we need to work on a certain sense of tznius, a certain sense of materialism. We are, you know, the studies show that of the Jews in America, certainly the Orthodox Jews in America, the modern Orthodox Jews make way more money on average than the other segments of the Jewish population in America, and yet very few modern Orthodox Jews feel they have enough. So we have a problem with materialism. And I think one thing that talks to me a little bit is that I think we need to work a little bit more on Ahavas HaTorah also. Meaning I think you're much more likely if you were to walk into a shul on a Shabbos afternoon, I'm not talking about at a time that someone's giving a shir, to the base medrash and see if there are people that are just coming to learn. Just coming to learn b'chavrusa. I think in the more right-wing Orthodox communities, you're much more likely to find people sitting and learning b'chavrusa. Because that's what you do. You have a long Shabbos afternoon, you sit and learn b'chavrusa. Much less likely, you know, when there's a shir, maybe they'll go. When there's a program, and there's a speaker talking about, you know, some important social issue or whatever, people will go. We're even talking about Torah. Sometimes people will go. But to just like make learning just a part of life and a part of like what you do with your chaver. That's what you do. You talk and learning, you sit and learn, you go to a base medrash, you have a night seder. I think we have to work on making our ahavas Torah and our ability, our the way we interact with Torah, a little bit more intense.
I'm not going to get the quote exactly right, but Rosh Hashanah spoke in Beit Shemesh a couple of months ago, and he was talking about Achdus, and he mentioned talking about how you know, what's the perfect Jew. He says, when I think of the perfect Jew, again, I'm paraphrasing. He says, you know, if there was a Jew that had the hislavus of a chassid, that had the kfifus to mesora of a svardi, the diktuk of a yeki, and the, he had said like a few more things, and he says, and the love of Eretz Yisrael of the dati lumi, says, then that would be a perfect Jew. Meaning, every group of halachic Jews, let's call them, people who are Shomri Torah mitzvos, in the larger sense, could teach everybody else something. But every area has what to work on themselves. And nobody's perfect, and nobody has the, you know, the dibs on perfection. And again, everyone has much to work on. But just one other point besides the one I mentioned earlier, which relates a little bit to one of the ones Rabbi Leibowitz said, and that is what I would call apathy. You know, how excited are we, you know, in terms of the value system, in terms of davening, in terms of learning, in terms of, you know, do we show more excitement when we get a new blank, a new phone, than we when we do when we get the new Rambam that came out, or the new this? Like, do our kids, what do our kids see? Like, do we, what do we get more excited about? My kids think it's funny. I get a new sefer, I kiss it, I like caress it. I'm like, they're like, what are you doing? You're like embarrassing. I'm like, this is, you know, this is, you know, we have to show, what are we excited about? And everybody should realize that. And you know, like I quote very often the Kotzker on the pasuk at the end of Mishpatim. I think it is Alei Alei Harav Yesham, go up the mountain and be there. As the Kotzker, if you go up the mountain, you're on the mountain. What do you mean be there? You could go up the mountain and you won't be on the mountain. You go up the mountain and be on the mountain. You could go to davening and you're not davening. I could go to the shir, but I'm not at the shir. I'm physically there, but I'm not there. Kutzker says, you know what life's about? Not just going up the mountain, but being on the mountain. Experiencing the mountain. Getting the most out of the mountain. And that is, you know, that's, we have to work on that. You know, sometimes you go into a davening, in the middle of davening, it sounds like a library. You don't hear anything. It's so quiet. It's such a chizik. You come here, you ashrei yoshev v'secha. Everybody laughs. I'm like, and what do our ashrei sound like in our shuls? It's again, there are some other areas of Am Yisrael that they daven a little louder with the slavos. Again, I'm not saying there's every note. I don't think anyone's perfect, and everybody has what to work on and to learn from each other. But I would say something that we have to work on is, you know, the focus on other things and therefore an apathy to religious, you know, activities, and that should really be forefront in our minds.
For our last question, and again, I apologize to everyone whose questions we did not get to. What's the most important piece of advice you'd give to someone giving a Dvar Torah or a Shir?
Okay, I think this is just an important ha'ara. I saw a Me'iri about a year and a half ago. Unbelievable. I mean, this is a take-home Me'iri. The Me'iri on Pirkei Avos. The Me'iri says, on Asus Yag LaTorah, you don't have to go far, first Mishnah. Asus Yag LaTorah, make a Siyag for Torah. So the Me'iri quotes one opinion that says, when a rabbi speaks, he shouldn't speak so long. He should make a siyag. He should make a fence for the Torah, because sometimes if you go too long, it's going to have the opposite effects. The Me'iri. Right. Seriously. Hashem said to those. But anyway, but what does that reflect? I think whenever one gives, and again, those who are, this is messages for B'nai Torah, not just for rabbis or mechanchim. If anybody's going to give, share any words of Torah, I think it's crucial to know your audience, know your venue, and know your expectations. Meaning, number one, you have to know your venue. You know, what's appropriate at a Shabbos table is not the same thing as speaking between Mincha and Ma'ariv and Shul, which is not the same thing as speaking at a Simcha, which is not the same thing as speaking under a Chuppah. Each of those are very different. And if somebody speaks a Mincha Ma'ariv thought at a Simcha, that's, nobody's going to be listening. And if somebody speaks a Shabbos table thought between Mincha and Ma'ariv, people are like, what is that? every venue demands, and one has to know before one does it, okay, what's expected in this venue? The length, the type, and the hardest. I remember one of my Rebbeim and Smicha said, the hardest slot ever is under the chuppah. You got to be short, you got to be personal, you got to be interesting. If I ever speak under a chuppah, I write it out. I write out exactly what I'm going to say. You always have to be worried. Whenever you have somebody go up there and they don't have notes, that's when you get nervous. You got to go up. Remember Rabbi Shapiro, who was the principal of Maimonides for many years. So he told me that he said when the Rav used to come in to speak to a second grade class on one of those little chairs, the Rav used to sit in one of those, he took out an index card of what he had prepared. When the Rav used to speak to second graders, the Rav. So preparation is crucial, but I think a major way of success in spreading Torah is to always know what the audience is expecting, and again, always err on the side of being too short than being too long. Again, some might say that we have some Rebbeim that they're just overflowing and they can't stop. Sometimes, not always, sometimes Kolamos of Goreya. Because sometimes people, maybe it's just our generation, they tune out. And, it has to do with the length, it has to do with the excitement, I remember somebody once said, also one of our smicha classes, you have about 33 seconds to catch them at the beginning of a drasha Shabbos morning. If not, they're gone. Maybe nowadays it's about 18 seconds. Right? It's gone down. But again, every venue requires something different, and that's crucial for any type of sharing of Torah. Know who you're talking to. Different audience. Giving a Dvar Torah to a bunch of guys at a Shabbos table is different than at a family. And again, and if we're trying to be Makadi Shem Shemayim and bring smiles and good feelings to the Torah that we're sharing, you know, we have to package it nicely. For Rav Schechter has said in the past also, there's Hidr Mitzvah by giving a shir too. It's not just Hidr Mitzvah by a Lulav and Esra. Hidr Mitzvah by a Sefer Torah. There's Hidr Mitzvah. Do you make nice sheets with numbers and underlines and people see it? It's Hidr Mitzvah. Hidr Mitzvah by giving a shir. Hidr Mitzvah how we package it. People shouldn't like think you get up to speak, oh gosh, him, he always speaks so long, he always this, he always that. We want people that they see. We should be a kli of a Kadosh Baruch Hu that people see us and they're excited and they know. Because it's all part of preparing and knowing exactly what's expected, what's the venue, and the Torah that is going to be shared. And again, also I thank the questions before my leader gives an answer. And again, it's always a schus to be able to share words of Torah with a chavrusa, with somebody who I very much respect and learn from, and someone who has his hand in many different areas for the Jewish people. And the Hashem should just give him koach to continue that gestalt.
It's always fun to listen to Rabbi Rosner talk about teaching Torah because it's like no Doresh no Mekayim, you know. So I'm going to try to live up to what he said in terms of Katsira Sa'omer. A couple of weeks ago, my daughter, who is 10 years old, confirmed, was sitting at the Shabbos table, and she announced, when I grow up, I'm going to be a great speaker. And I said, wow, that's so interesting. Why do you think so? Why do you think you're going to be a great speaker? And I was hoping she would say, well, because my Abba's such a great speaker. That's not what she said. She said, because I watch people when they speak, and I see what works and what doesn't work. Which I thought was I don't mean to brag, but that's a pretty brilliant remark for a 10-year-old. She said, I see that, like, if they tell a story, then it catches people, and then they could say a Dvar Torah, because people will listen. And if they just go straight into, well, I have a question on it, like, no one's listening anymore, and then they can't really say anything. So I just pay attention to what really works. So that's a piece of advice number one. Look at the masters. Look at the people who do a great job. And I gained so much just from listening to Rabbi Isaac Bernstein's Parsha Shiurim. And when I say over his Divrei Torah, I say them better than when I would say over anybody else's Divrei Torah, because I find myself like mimicking his presentation, his style, his flair for the dramatic. So look at what works. Watch other people. That's piece of advice number one. Second, and this Rabbi Rosner alluded to as well, I only spoke under a chuppah once, because when people ask me, it's rare that anyone asks me. No one likes speeches under the chuppah anymore. So it's rare that anyone asks me, but when they do, I say no. I say, I don't think people like speeches under the chuppah, and then only if they persist. So there was one person that absolutely insisted. So I remember when I got up to speak, you heard an audible groan. There's nothing more deflating than when you're about to get up to speak and you're going, oh, the whole crowd. And then afterwards, people said, I apparently never spoke so well in my life. People came over to me like, that was great. You know why it was great? It was a minute and 30 seconds. That's how long I spoke. I don't know what I said. I think I said something about the Zadies and the Bubbies, but like, it was a minute and 30 seconds. And that was great. So there is that. But I think even more importantly, and Rabbi Razin alluded to this, is the being organized. A lot of times things make a lot of sense in your own head, but it needs to come outside of your own head before you share it with other people. Because a lot of things that make sense in your own head, the second they come out, you realize that they don't make any sense at all. So how do you get it outside of your head? You either say it over to somebody, even say it over to yourself, write it down, and make sure that if you can't formulate it in words when you're putting pen to paper, when you're typing on a computer, then you're not going to be able to formulate it in words when you're on the spot and you have to take the ideas that are in your head and express them. It has to exist outside of your head before you share it with other people. And the final bit of advice I would say is mizikena mesponan. You know, we have to look at our great teachers and the greatest teacher that I ever had, probably, is Rav Schachter. He's I don't know who else could have captured my attention for 2 straight hours every single day for years. And you look at some of his tricks of how he does it. So not just his clarity and not just the fact that he prepares always, but he's always telling stories because he's reading the audience. He sees when he's about to lose them. And he brings us right back in with the story. And if he doesn't have a story, he'll start talking about the biography of the person that he's about to quote. Random biographical facts. And you know what? That sticks with people also. And all of a sudden, you become so much more well-rounded. Instead of just hearing a Gemara show, you got a little bit of a history lesson. You learn what a Galatiana is. Like, you get all these new ideas. And it's a very, very valuable tool you should try to find. Try to find interesting anecdotes. Try to find stories. It's okay to be funny, not to be inappropriately funny, but to be funny. So I would say those are the bits of advice. Watch people who speak very well. Say it over first. Make sure it exists outside of yourself first, and be engaging by telling stories and talking about the different svarim and rabbanim that you are quoting. And again, I just also want to thank Rabbi Razner for staying way past. He has no real direct achrayus for the Masmidim. He's a very busy person. Obviously, he's trying to function as a camp rabbi for a very large camp over here, and he takes a lot of time for us over the course of the summer, and particularly tonight. He's got to wake up at some ungodly hour tomorrow morning to catch a flight, or he's going to have a crazy day tomorrow. And I just want to thank him for taking the time to enrich us with his insights and with his Divrei Torah.
Fortunately, we need to end the Q&A. Again, we have tremendous Hakaras HaTov to Rav Razner and Rav Leibowitz for taking time out of their night to answer our questions. We will not be having another shir tonight, so we're going to be davening Maariv at the regular time, 10 o'clock.
And thank you very much to Meir for organizing all this.